Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Debaterios podcast. I am one of your awesome hosts, Oreo, and my other awesome host is sitting far away from me, like really far away from me. His name is SAW Debates. How you doing, man?
How are you doing? I'm doing fantastic. I just got back from Canada. Just came off a vacation in Montreal, Quebec, and I'm feeling great. I'm feeling refreshed, feeling inspired, got that spark back. I'm feeling awesome.
Did you eat any baguettes in French Canada?
No, not baguettes. You don't have baguettes. You have poutine. Do you know what poutine is?
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh my goodness. It is this. All right. If you think that Americans have like a monopoly on food that is just absolutely horrible for you, you have not been to Quebec, you have not been to Montreal, and you have not seen poutine. It is, so what poutine is, it's French fries, usually, drizzled in this sauce. It's like a gravy, drizzled in the sauce with cheese curds on top of it, and it is delicious, and also, I don't need to eat again this year. That is, if I was a bear and I needed to, like, eat enough to last for 3 months, I would eat one regular-sized portion of poutine from one of their restaurants, and I would be good. I am still full. I have not been hungry since, like, Thursday, the last time I had poutine in Canada. It's so good. Oh, man, it's so good. So, that's what I did. I ate poutine. I got some cool stuff, so I got my... got my pop filter in Canada, which why didn't I just buy it here? Because I was in Canada and I wanted, every time I look at my pop filter, I'll think of Canada. I'll think of my trip. So how have you been doing? What have you been doing for the past week? Well, I was in Canada. What were you up to?
Nothing. I've mostly been just on Twitter, like I always am, and playing video games once again, like I always am. So
what are you playing right now?
I'm just playing on my PlayStation 3. I'm trying to beat, because I deleted all my saved data once. And I did this on purpose. I did this on purpose because it was like, I was looking up solutions to like stop my PS3 from like freezing some of the games. And it was like, yeah, you should delete all your saved game data. And I'm like, cool. So I did that. And like some of the freezing did still happen, but I found a fix, though. But just
after everything was gone.
Yeah, so I'm trying to beat Uncharted 1 again. Okay. I actually have all the Uncharted games, so I'm going to plan on beating them all, but yeah.
Yeah, Uncharted is a really cool series because you can power through a game in a day, and it's not that big a deal. So you can like make a weekend out of it, play through all the Uncharted games, including like the DLC and the side games and stuff. You can power through that in a weekend if you're like dedicated, if you're a true gamer. Capital G.
And I'm also planning on getting an Xbox One soon. So,
all right.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to upgrade.
Did you go from like GameCube to PS3 to now Xbox just to get the full?
So my first ever console, I still have it. It was the PlayStation 2, and I got it in 2008 because my uncle bought it for me for having good grades.
Nice.
And then I got a Nintendo DS for my sister. It was once again another, I think it was like around Christmas though. So it might have been an early Christmas gift, but I still have that. The third console I ever had was a Nintendo Wii. I still have it. Mm-hmm. It was once my brother-in-law's, but he didn't play with it often. So he decided to hand it down to me. My fourth console is the PlayStation 3, which I bought like, I think, 2 months ago. So
there's still a great giant back catalog of games on the PS3, and now it's super cheap. The game so you can like find PS, how much was your PS3 that you bought 2 months ago in the year of our Lord, 2019?
I think it was like $150 something. It was cheap. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised it's still that expensive. Oh, well.
Yeah, it was refurbished, too, but for a refurbished console, it plays great. Like, it feels like it, like you just got it out of the box. So.
Yeah, they can last a while if they're even moderately well taken care of. My PS4 is about to poop out.
Oof.
Yeah, I got it when they first came out, and it's getting slow. I hug it, I whisper sweet nothings to it, but I think its time is about to come. That's okay.
Yeah. I'm getting a, so I'm just getting an Xbox One because one, my girlfriend has one and she's urging me to get Xbox Gold, but I don't have the money for that right now. So, yeah.
Well, you can always like cycle through burner accounts. You just never save anything. If they still do the get a month free.
Yeah.
Which no one's ever done that before.
Yeah. They usually get the 12-month one, which is like, I think $60, which isn't bad. But
it's the price of a game.
Yeah.
But how much are you going to do? Like,
so, okay. So with this one, I'm just going to get the Xbox One. I'm not worried about gold because it's like, I just got it. I'm not worried about playing online right now, but
yeah.
I guess like with after this, I'll try to get it for 12 months. Just a 12 month one. That's not bad.
Yeah. There's always the option of streaming too. If you want to drop another $150 for a capture card. Yeah, it's expensive to get into that hobby slash profession.
Like streaming and stuff.
Yeah. A good microphone, a good camera. Usually, not always, but usually a recent console. A capture card, so you can actually get stuff from the console. So, yeah. All right. I guess we're going to transition into talking about our first topic, because we needed that little bit of a levity to talk about poutine and the PS3, because our first topic today is going to be ICE and ICE facilities. So, woo!
And not the type you put in your cups, guys. Like, the actual...
not ICE cubes, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. So, they've been in the news a lot for good reason. Here recently, what was their most recent story? Like, they detained a little girl for a week who ended up being a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, she was, I think I heard about that one. They were, I think, 18, and it was some issue with, like, their documents or something, and they were like, oh, yeah, well, it says here she was born here, but really she was born in the United States. She's a U.S. citizen, and they kept her for over a week in some pretty bad conditions.
Oh, okay, so not a little girl, but... Still, anybody who's younger than me is little. So if you just don't have the right documentation on you at the time, they'll just keep you for a week. Yeah. That is can she do anything? Can she sue? I wonder.
I mean, she could, but
still, that stuff shouldn't happen in the first place. Like, that kind of overzealous drive to get everyone, and I don't think it's unfair to say that the current administration is really behind this giant push to be to be more forceful in enforcing these policies and being
people have noted too, because like they were like, well, Obama had these ICE facilities, and yeah, I do condemn him for that because they were still in shitty conditions under him. But the difference is what most people have noted is that with Obama and the presidents before him who have used like the facilities, it seemed like they were doing it more so just to keep people who didn't have, I guess, the proper documents. But what Trump is doing, he's just putting anyone and everyone in there. It's like no discrimination for like any reason why you're there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that people realize that things like due process and human rights given under the United States Constitution doesn't just apply solely to citizens. It applies to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So if a tourist comes over here, do you not think that they're imbibed, or do you not think a tourist is given the same rights as everyone else? Like, if you're not an actual citizen, you're just over here as a tourist, can they just fucking take you? No.
You have rights.
You have rights. And even if you are undocumented, quote unquote, here illegally, there is still, you still have the rights to due process. You still have the rights to be treated fairly under the law. So I really don't think that the people who are saying that, well, if they don't want to be treated poorly, well, then they just shouldn't be here illegally. Then no, those people don't know law and they're just horrible.
Right. Or like the people who are like, oh yeah, well, why would you take your kid with you? It's like, and I actually saw this in a Twitter post. It's funny because this guy posted like a scenario. He's like, imagine if like the U.S. was like a post-apocalyptic society. Like the only safe place that we could go to is Canada, right? And let's say you decide to go there illegally. So you illegally cross the U.S.-Canadian border, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they detain you. And like and you have your kid with you because one, the conditions in the U.S. are dangerous and you probably don't want your kid to be alone in that, you know? And it's like, oh, well, they detain you and send you back. Like, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? Like, are you just going to accept it? Or are you going to try to say, well, hey, I belong here, right?
Yeah.
And somebody was like, oh, that's different because that's a scenario. And this is real life. And I'm like, but it applies. It applies, man. It's like that's almost what they go through. Like, they're escaping conditions, which, like, it's very poor for their families to live in. Very poor for them to live in. And they want to go to a place where they feel like they can have a better life. And that is apparently the United States. So,
yeah, I also love people who say that, well, they're not real refugees, they're economic refugees. They're just trying to escape to get, you know, more economic opportunities, as if economics and money isn't what lets you buy the things that keep you from things.
And almost as if, like, there aren't, like, that's not an actual thing, because that is. It's like, because there's different types of refugees. There's environmental ones. So, like their country's going through some sort of environmental, I guess you could say, tragedy. So, like a famine or a drought of some sort, or just major flooding. So they have to leave that country. There's political refugees, like with war, and like there's a regime that just is terrible. Yeah. And then there's, I guess you could say, economic refugees, people who are in poor countries, countries that don't have the best financial situations, and they want to seek a better life elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people only really see the first two as legitimate because, you know, if a tornado strikes your country, oh no, that's going, there's nothing you can do about that. And political refugees, if you're being actively targeted, yeah, of course you're unsafe. But why is it different if you just don't have the money to survive and there are no opportunities, economic opportunities in your country to better your life? Not even better your life, just get yourself out of a situation where you might not starve to death or you might not die from lack of healthcare. So there's just certain types of danger that people see as legitimate and certain types of danger that people see as illegitimate. And it makes no logical sense to me.
Also, wait, because I was just looking this up. So they're not called economic refugees. They're called economic migrants because most people, when they, like, because the word refugee, it's more so associated with, like, you're leaving because of fear, persecution based on race, religion, nationality, political opinion, you know, those good things. But economic migrants, they leave their regions due to harsh economic conditions. So
okay, so they just don't call them refugees. I guess
that's a good definition.
Yeah. So instead of economic refugees, economic migrants.
Mm-hmm.
I can still see an argument to be made that they're a form of refugee, though.
Yeah.
If you have just zero opportunities where you live and you can't access food, you can't access healthcare, you can't access good education, is that really that different than an environmental crisis that takes those things away from you anyway?
Right.
And if you have an environmental crisis and your country just doesn't have the resources or the capital to rebuild those things quick enough, and there does need to be a time frame that's acceptable, it's the lines between those things are very, very blurry to me. And I'm kind of in favor of just helping more people in general.
Yeah, same.
So I want to pull up a few. So the ACLU is going hard on ICE and Border Patrol abuses because there have been so many high profile cases. But these, of course, high profile cases make the news and they're what gets us involved and gets us interested in that topic. But it's not like these things are new. A lot of that stuff was happening under Obama. And don't you love when people bring that up as if, like, oh, wait, no, we like Obama, that means we have to like everything he did, or something like that. Yeah,
right.
I always love that because that's how they think, that if you love your leader, that means that you love every single thing they do and you have to defend every single action. So, you know, that's how they think. And that's how they think that we think. So, but yeah, there are a lot of rampant abuses in immigration detention prove that ICE is rotten to the core. So this isn't from an attorney from the ACLU. The ACLU is not just a super left-leaning organization. They've defended right-leaning and super conservative far-right people, too, in the name of civil liberties. So I don't think that saying that they are a far-left institution holds much water. So, right. Yeah. So according to reports, a 24-year-old woman who was 6 months pregnant. So 6 months pregnant, like, knows she's pregnant. It doesn't seem like this is one of those just tragedies that was going to happen anyway. No, this was due to a really, really horrible treatment. And, you know, oh, don't cross the border if you're pregnant. That's dangerous. Like, oh my goodness. Why do you think she's leaving?
Since fall of 2017, we and our partners have been tracking the treatment of pregnant women in ICE detention following a policy change by the Trump administration that eliminated the presumption of release for pregnant women and removed internal reporting requirements. ICE does not publicly report this information, but recent statements to the media note that 1,655 pregnant women were booked into ICE custody over a 10-month period between 2017 and 2018, and 28 women may have miscarried in ICE custody over the past 2 years.
Yeah, this is not an isolated incident, and
yeah,
this is due to conditions in those facilities that could be improved. However, I think a lot of people are going to use the same argument that they do for prisons. Like, oh, if you make conditions in prison too humane, it won't be a deterrent. And ultimately, and this has been
stated, yeah, and it's like, well, if you keep conditions the same, that also won't be a deterrent, because it seems like if you look at the recidivism rates, they're really high here. I think it was like most prisoners, like once they get out, they're back in prison, I think 5 months after release. I think I have to look at the statistics again, but yeah, it's just like you have to, like, I know it seems like, oh yeah, if you improve prisons, then the prisoners are just going to be having fun and we can't have that. It's like, well, yeah, you can. Like, that improves, like, one, that improves conditions for especially mentally ill prisoners, like prisoners with mental health issues. Like, that's a problem. And I feel like if prisons were to implement some sort of group therapy or at least have more counselors on site, then yeah, that would improve conditions for them. Also, look at the prisons. I always like to use, I think this is Sweden, for example, because their prisons, I know, like, people when we're looking at them from the outside, we're like, oh shit, that's a luxury prison. Like, dude, their cell looks like, it's not even a cell, it's like a dorm. And I'm like, well, yeah, because they're human beings. They don't deserve to be locked in a cage, you know?
And why are you putting people in prison anyway? Is it punitive? Is it protective? Or is it rehabilitative? So I don't.
I think their prisons are rehabilitative. So yeah, they're focused on trying to reacclimate prisoners into society rather than just punishing them.
Yeah. What if you gave them a ton of resources to better their situation when they got out, so they wouldn't commit the crime and come back?
Right. So, and it's like, I know, like, because Candace Owens, she made this argument. She's like, oh, private prisons, they have like programs for like prisoners to like learn how to do jobs and stuff when they get. I'm like, yeah, but it's not working. It doesn't even benefit them.
I also love the logic. So people will, you know, people will act in their own self-interest. And even if there comes a risk of being in a detention center in the United States with bad conditions, for some people, the trip is still worth it. But what if you're trying to say that these treatment facilities, the horrible conditions, are part of the deterrent, that means you want to make sure that you are going to encounter worse conditions than the country you left in. So all those crime-infested shitholes that Trump fans like to talk about, you want to make detention centers even worse than those because we're so great as a country? Like, we're so great, we're going to make the treatment of these people even worse? That makes no moral sense to me whatsoever.
And it makes zero sense because, like, if think about it, like, if we pride ourselves on being the greatest country, well, shouldn't we be giving the greatest treatment to these people then?
Yeah.
So, like, oh, God, why did I say these people? That sounds racist.
No, it doesn't. Should we be? No, you're just talking about in general these people. Yeah.
It was just like, because I heard it and I'm like, ah, oh, crap, no, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, but man, yeah, I edit this later, I'm gonna make you look so bad. I need to be the good one on the podcast, and I have editorial power, so don't even try. I'm gonna make you look bad no matter what. Might as well just roll with it.
But yeah, to illegal immigrants, like, if we pride ourselves on being the greatest country, well, shouldn't we be giving the greatest treatment to illegal immigrants when they're in, I guess you could say, detention centers? But
And just greatest treatment, like toothbrushes and
right
mouthwash, padding to toothpaste. Sit and sleep on.
Right. They don't even have soap, do they?
No. In a lot of cases, no, they haven't had, some people haven't had showers for like 40 days. So how long do you go without a shower before you feel gross?
I think the longest I went without a shower was 4 days. And then I start to feel gross because yeah. It was spring break. So I was like, okay, I don't have to take a shower for that long.
Right?
So I was like 4 days without a shower. And then I started to stink and I'm like, yeah, I got to take a shower.
I stink by the end of the day. I'm just always sweating at all times. and so I stink at the end of the day. Not to get too graphic, but if I take off certain articles of clothing and it's been just a little bit too long, you can feel this physical wafting in the air that will actually knock you over. So do that for 40 days and cram a bunch of people into a really, really tiny space. Can you imagine just like those conditions, just being around people who haven't showered for 40 days? That could be...
I'm pretty sure that's a health hazard too, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's why a lot of people are getting sick. People should not die from the flu. Healthy people should not die from the flu in the United States, no matter where you come from. That is extremely preventable with like the most basic considerations for human health and safety. Like if someone is sick and had the flu, you have to move them away from the general population and treat them. Otherwise, a bunch of people are going to have the flu. And the people who don't have the best immune systems because they're really old or really young or just they're immunocompromised, that's potentially deadly and preventable.
Mm-hmm.
But the standards for ICE detention centers should be higher than those of prisons because these people are not, in most cases, they're not criminals or they're not criminally dangerous. There's no reason for these conditions.
But they're just hyped up to be that way because of like, oh yeah, MS-13. And it's like, yeah, MS-13 is fucking bad, but I don't think that the majority of illegal immigrants are MS-13.
No, the MS-13 started in America, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're right. Founded in 1980, Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, so people are just coming over here to join them because we got the best gangs too, right. I guess. Make gangs great again.
You know what? And that I'm going to tie that to another game, Grand Theft Auto. Dude, they do such a great job of, critiquing America in terms of like criminal life. Because if you look at Grand Theft Auto 4, which is, I love that so much. It's one of my favorites in the series. Nico Bellic, he's an Eastern European immigrant, comes over here. And the only reason he comes here is because his cousin, he kind of lies about his life in America. He's like, yeah, I live in a big, nice house and I got women all over me and I got all this money, blah, blah, blah. And, but he actually lives in a crappy apartment in a not so good neighborhood.
Yep.
But yeah, it details like how, basically neoliberalism, and capitalism, it's easy to exploit it. Like you can just take advantage of it. You can rise to the top, you know, step over people, just do what you have to do to get to the top. And I think that's what the GTA series has always critiqued is like, yeah, well, look how easy it is. Like you think, being a businessman is easy. Like that's the way to get to the top. No, look at criminals, man. They can just do whatever they want, man. And they can rise to the top. And, even police corruptions, I think detailed in the games too, especially Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, with CJ and, Tenpenny, just that dynamic of like the police. You think they're there to serve and protect, but really they're not. They're just as involved in crime as the criminals. It's nice.
Yeah. Criminology is an extremely complex topic and I'm by no means qualified to talk about it. But what I do know of just general sociology is that people will act in their best self-interest most of the time. And that means doing the action that you think is going to get you the most benefits. And it's almost impossible to see long-term consequences from any action, but you cannot just dismiss criminality as people being evil. If you,
you have to look at like the reasons why, and like even because, like you said, like people don't think about the long term consequences, and I think that's mostly because we as humans we kind of look at things in short term, right? So we look at things in here and now. We don't really try to analyze things in the future, you know?
Yeah, because it makes sense physiologically, because without a short term, there is no long term. Short term is always, always more important than long term, because you can have a short term with a long term. You can't have a long term with no short term. So what you do now is setting up long term no matter what. And so if your options are to work a minimum wage job that won't give you enough hours to survive, or sell drugs.
Join a street gang.
Yeah, or sell weed.
Sell drugs, which,
which weed,
you know, gets you money.
Yeah, which gets you money now, to actually like get out of, to like afford basic needs, and maybe, just maybe, some cool stuff too. Like, it's so horrible that you might want some things that you enjoy too. So it's really, really complicated. And this demonization of people who are trying to come here for a better life, and a lot of them are going through the proper channels. They're going into ports of entry, and they're getting detained and then treated like absolute dog shit. And it's been explicitly said that they're treated like dog shit because we don't want them coming here, which is...
Which is just like, really?
All right. Do we have anything else to say about that?
No, I think we covered that really good.
Yeah, so... We move on. So we had that really, really fun topic. And our other topic today is, I think, equally fun, would you say?
Yeah.
Youth radicalization online.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'll let you lead off on this one.
All right. So pretty much we've all known this for some time, that on the internet nowadays, it's easier to radicalize youth. Because one, mostly, and this is mostly with teenagers. So one, teenagers are very impressionable, almost like little kids. I mean, they're like, because one, they're trying to find themselves. This has always been noted that teenagers, I think I'm still going through this, where you're trying to basically find who you are in this world. Like, where do you fit in? What do you want to be? What legacy do you want to leave on this planet? And, I don't know if like the far right or just right wingers or the anti-SJWs, I don't know if they know that. Like, they know that, oh yeah, well, teenagers, they're trying to find something to identify with, or if it's just like happening. Like, because I think I noted this before on one of our podcasts that radicalization mostly happens in like gaming circles. I've noticed this over the years, how basically there's this tie between video games and politics, even if, you know, as much as we want to say, oh, well, I don't like politics in my video games, or, oh, there is no politics in gaming. It's like, well, that's not true. GTA is definitely political. Metal Gear Solid, Splinter Cell. The list goes on, basically. And it's like, even in games that you wouldn't think are political, like Splatoon, like there's still people who have political opinions and they play these games and they get into political discussions with teenagers and stuff. And it's just like, that would be the least likely place you'd expect radicalization to occur, but it does. It's really odd.
You have a lot of, I don't think it's unfair to assume, because I am a hashtag capital G gamer. I don't think it's unfair to assume that a lot of gamers are introverted, that we don't get out a ton. Our human contact is a bit limited in our day-to-day lives, just because, and there's nothing wrong with that. We're just introverted, and that's why we're drawn to things. That's why we're drawn to media, video games, in this case, being like the one where we spend the most time on. And so when you find a community of these like-minded people, you start to like bonding over things, and just it happens to be that a lot of gamers are, you know, they're cis white dudes, or and of course there's exceptions to that, but when they say that they don't like politics and games, like they found this thing that they all have in common, and now it's being changed to, and the fear is that it's appealing to other people, which means it's going away from them. So I do view that with some sort of sympathy, But at the same time, Jesus Christ, you do not have to go full anti-SJW saying that anybody who has just a drop of melanin in their skin is threatening to take away your hobby.
Right, right.
So, to reiterate the joke, there's two genders, male and political.
Yeah, and I've even noticed that with even the NBA 2K community, it gets political sometimes. Because, like, I remember when NBA 2K16 came out. So, there's this game mode in those games called My Career, where basically you get to... It's basically like you get to experience what it's like to be an NBA player. So, you make your own character. I guess you choose your own archetype, which is, like, what type of player you want to be, your own position, number, all that good stuff. And in that specific story mode, there was a black family because the game was written by Spike Lee and directed by Spike Lee. And if you know anything about Spike Lee's work, it mostly revolves around African-American life. And so the family in the game, it's black. And some people were complaining about that because it's like, well, what if I make a white dude? It wouldn't make sense. And I'm like, it's just a fucking game.
it's a story mode.
I was watching this 1-2K YouTuber who I still watch to this day. Like I used to watch a lot, and I still watch him. Shakedown 2012. If you ever want to check him out, he's really cool. He's entertaining. And I remember he commented on it, and he was like, you know, he's like, I don't see what's the problem. He's like, every action adventure game I played, it's like always like a white dude at the helm, and it's like you never really see black people at the helm of like video games. And he was like, I really respected that about Spike Lee, is that he decided to put a black family in the spotlight.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who think that there needs to be a reason to include anybody who's black or gay or a woman, even, or right, especially trans. There needs,
I mean,
to be,
look
a
at
reason.
The outrage with Cyberpunk, like when they were like, oh yeah, well, you can make your character non-binary or trans, and like all the gamer bros just came out and they were like, yeah, oh, I can finally be an attack helicopter. It's like,
which, yes, that joke is so funny, man. It's so fresh, so clean. And just having the option is enough. Just to know that you're not the sole focus is enough to, I hate using the word trigger because it actually has a meaning that's sometimes lost, but that's enough to trigger them to say that,
yeah,
oh, you can, there's a slider that lets you play the game in a way that I wouldn't. That's horrible. Because the only right way, there needs to be a reason for that. It can't just be there. Like, you need to be able to pick what I want, and that's it. Because what I want is what real gamers want, because I'm a real gamer. So, youth radicalization is something I've been more and more into, especially as I do some more research into comedy. So, would you say, because you were a conservative for a while on the internet, you were sort of at least adjacent, if not in some of those circles, how big of a role did jokes and memes and internet humor play into that community?
It was big. Whether it was like the corny I identify as blank jokes, or even just like, I guess you could say, more dark jokes. Like about like a Pinochet. Oh my God, I hope I'm pronouncing this guy's name right. Pinochet throwing socialists out of helicopters.
I think it's Pinochet.
Pinochet,
I might be wrong about that.
It looks like Pinochet, but it's probably Pinochet. But we're just going to call him P.
Yeah, we'll call him P.
P throwing socialists out of helicopters, you know, which now that I look in hindsight, like now I look at that joke, I'm like, that's... Bro, that's not cool. Why would he do that? But yeah, jokes did play a large role in my radicalization.
Yeah. So, how many of those jokes were just this SJW is bad?
Purple. That was for me. I don't want to say like this is less the experience for everyone, but for me, it was a lot. Like a lot of the jokes that I encountered were mainly revolving around SJWs. Like it was a meme that somebody posted today, and I used to see this a lot, and it was like, oh, let me guess, I think it was like a picture of a guy in like a bikini or something, and it's like, let me guess, Trump is not your president. And yeah, for some reason that used to make me laugh when I was in right-wing circles, but now that I look at it, I'm just like, that's not funny.
So humor is super interesting. So let me, so I'm going to tell you a joke. And since I'm telling you that I'm telling you a joke, it's not going to be funny because you're expecting it now. But
right.
Why does a lawyer's funeral only have two pallbearers?
Why?
Because a trash can only has two handles. Not even a sympathy smile on that one. So that's an example of a joke, and the joke there is that lawyers are bad. And I didn't tell you that lawyers were bad in the joke. You had to fill that in on your own. Why are lawyers bad? So there are certain norms and stereotypes about lawyers that you already have to have in your brain to make that joke work.
Mm-hmm.
Replace lawyers with trans people.
No,
same exact joke. The same structure. It relies on the same structure, but it's extremely different. I didn't give you any information about lawyers or trans people, but you fill in those blanks yourself. So the reason that is potentially extremely dangerous is that, mm-hmm. Are you familiar with, I don't know if it has an actual name, Andrew Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People?
No.
Or just know of it, know that it's a thing?
Nah.
Okay, it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it's like one of the, it's probably the most famous self-help book of all time. And one of the things he says, how to influence people, like you have to make him think that it was their idea. If you want someone to do something that you want them to do, you have to make it them think that it was their idea. And part of humor is you fill in the blanks. The joke in both of those is that lawyers bad, trans people bad. But if you replace it with something like just some innocuous group like chefs, if you say, like, why does a chef's funeral only have two pallbearers? Because a trash can only has two handles. That's a little confusing, right? You're not familiar with any norms that say that chefs are bad, or at least I'm not. That's kind of confusing. But if you already have a vague notion that some people think that trans people are bad, you get to fill in that blank. It becomes your idea. Humor is 100% a reaction on the part of the hearer. Mm-hmm. And they get to fill in the blanks, and then that becomes their idea. All those blanks they filled in are now that came from them, and they're more likely to adopt those beliefs in the future. So that's why humor is an extremely effective rhetorical device. And when you're in that state of being a kid, a teenager trying to find your place in the world, wow, you're getting all these really good ideas through this humor. You might not even realize it's happening, but now you're finding a place, you're finding a community, and... But you're not being brainwashed because you filled in the blanks of the joke based on what you already knew. So I think that's really interesting. It's something that it should be explored more.
It's just that, like, because I remember we were talking to Logic Guy last time, and he said that the internet is now the new battleground or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's where I think it's where most communication happens at this point.
Yeah. It's like, because I feel like since most younger people are using the internet now, and like I rarely see face-to-face communication or just like social media in general or like apps to communicate with one another, that this is a new battleground. And the left is losing really, really bad. So
yeah, there's some progress being made in some corners, but
yeah,
it is tough to counter that a really, really strong rhetoric. Like it's hard to get people excited for basic human empathy,
right? It's and I've really- even and I saw this too in that same post with the meme. This one guy commented, he was like, dude, you're still using 2016 memes, and he's like, oh yeah, but guess what, the left can't meme, we're the ones using the memes, that's the thing. And I'm like, oh shit, okay. So he just explained how he's getting people on his side. And what I saw from the left guy, that's what I'm going to call him, the left guy is he was basically just arguing against the person who really, one, I guess he didn't see any reason to argue, or two, he just didn't care because he was just posting memes and stuff. And the left guy's like, oh, well, that's a 2016 meme. That's a boomer meme. And he's like, oh, well, it's a meme. So,
yeah, I'm fine with if the left can't meme. Memes are just jokes that are repeated over and over and over. And they stop being funny because you see them so often. I'm fine if we can't meme. We're funnier. Because a lot of humor is directed at subverting norms. And if you're a conservative, dude, you fight for the norms. You're trying to uphold the norms. So Yeah. If we can't meme, oh no, we can't make the lowest form of comedy. Now, that's not 100% fair. There are some really, really good memes out there, and I do like them. But a lot of them are just really, really, really simple jokes that you have to have some sort of disdain for entire swaths of people to enjoy. So, no, I'm okay with that.
Some people said that was the Ugandan Knuckles meme.
Yeah.
So it was mocking African people.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
You can definitely see that. Well, it depends. It doesn't matter what it was meant to do, right? It matters how you see it.
Like, right.
If you just saw it as, da way, and that's kind of a funny thing to say, and if you thought the guy was in on it, that could be funny for other reasons. But if you thought, that's how they talk. It's like,
right.
Yeah. So humor is 100% reaction. So there's no right. There's no right answer there. There are cases to be made. I need to walk that back a little bit. I do like memes, but I like some thought put into them. And a lot of right-wing memes are just the same two jokes over and over and over.
Yeah.
I'm genuine. Like, go ahead.
Like, oh, yeah. I saw one. It was like liberal men. They checked their muffins in the oven like this, and it was a guy doing a split. And, like, I guess his butt was a little out, and he was, like, looking through the window of the oven like this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's not funny.
It's like, That's a proper hip hinge. Your butt should be sticking out. You don't want to round your back and doing all that kind of stuff. So, left-wing guys have proper biomechanics. We move better. Fact confirmed by right-wing meme. Mm-hmm. So, I do think that we should use comedy as more of a rhetorical weapon. And we can get better at it. And the hard part is, there does need to be some sort of edge. There needs to be some sort of violation of norms for comedy to work. And it's a hard line to walk without being genuinely offensive to a lot of people. And it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what your intent is. If you are offensive to somebody, that's not wrong. Your intent really doesn't matter. So
right. I
think it's going to take some work on our part, because I do think that we are genuinely funny. I think that left-wing people are just more funny than conservative people by principle, because they are trying to uphold those norms. And I think there's something to be said about using humor as a rhetorical device. And we need to do it better.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to the Beta Rios podcast. Once again, I am your awesome co-host, Oreo.
And I've been your other co-host, SJW Debates, also known as Justin.
And yeah, we'll see you next time on the Beta Rios podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.